On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake. Find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Lamonte Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW. Let us surprise you.
Matt, why? Maybe to listen to Deuce Mason.
Maybe so.
I was going to say, because Deuce and Mo are on the call.
Yeah, maybe that would be it. But it is so far away.
It's not a barometer, right?
No, it's so far away from NBA.
You said that man scored 34 points?
Yeah, 34.
Has he scored four in his career?
Barely. It feels even further away than college basketball from
damn.
And I know a lot of these people in the G League played college basketball, but Devin Carter, I don't even think Devin Carter got 34 in at Providence. I don't know. Maybe I'm frustrated because I'm confused.
Matt, what do you think about Devin Carter? Period.
Really bad pick that should cost the person who did the pick the job.
Well, damn.
Like that.
Okay.
That's pretty much what. But I've been consistent with that.
Yeah.
Devin is not. He's just not ready, especially for a team in a hunt for contention, in a hunt for like just winning.
Mm-hmm.
And you especially are. You went from a ton of depth at the point guard position to none.
Yeah.
Like zero. It's Markelle Fultz and kind of Malik Monk, and that's it. So yeah, Devin Carter's just not ready. I still believe in the kid. I don't think it's like fair to write him off completely. I think he still does present some things that, like, if you were to tell me that he could be like a Josh Hart light with his skill set 3-4 years down the road, I think that's possible for him to achieve. But it's not what the Sacramento Kings need right now, and unfortunately, that's like it's a results based league, and you didn't join the Charlotte Hornets, right? You didn't join the Washington Wizards where you could just go out there and play through all this crap. You're on a team that not just is going for a playoff spot, they've attached everything now to this playoff spot after the De'Aaron Fox trade and all the contracts they've brought in. It's as playoff or bust as it gets right now, and Devin Carter can't contribute to that.
Yeah, and like I said, just off of respect to the tumultuous start to his NBA career that he's had, when you talk about injury, getting surgery, not being able to have a training camp and all this other stuff, I also, you know, I'll give him time to see if, you know, he's able to work on his game and improve some stuff going into next season. But it's looking like a tough pick right now for Monty McNair in that front office, man, because he's not able to contribute this year. And you had a situation where you needed somebody to contribute this year, whether it was the rookie or you traded that pick. And he hasn't been able to provide that. And that's tough to see. It is.
Well, the thing is, like, good teams take projects in the draft, right? We see good teams take players that are a couple years away, especially later on in the lottery or outside of the lottery. But it's because you have a depth or foundation in place to where currently you can still compete while giving that player the time that they need. There was not nearly enough depth in place, as was made perfectly clear by the start of this season, until the trades for Jake LaRavia and Jonas Valanciunas. There was no depth on this team whatsoever to be able to give Devin Carter the the time. Now, there was technically depth at his position. They went out and got Jordan McLaughlin, who barely played. They had Fox. They had Malik. But they still, at that spot, could have taken somebody to help address their depth elsewhere or to give them more win now talent. The Kings treated that draft like they were the Oklahoma City Thunder, like they were the Los Angeles Lakers, like they were these teams that already had such a core and then second unit established that, yeah, Dev can take his time coming back from his injury. Devin can get surgery and come into the league halfway through and we'll see what he is and he can just work on his game and, hey, maybe next year he can contribute. But you didn't have the team to support that, which, again, it's just a short – it shows another short-sighted decision from the front office and how they assess their roster at the time, how they assess their roster now, and where they assess the where this organization and this team is at right now.
Do you think they did that? Do you think they had that core/roster in place? I'm wording that confusingly. Do you think they believed they had that core, that roster in place to where, yeah, if Devin missed some time, it's no big deal?
I want to say yes to give them the benefit of the doubt, but through whether it's conversations or speculation, like all other signs point to you didn't do your job correctly. Mm-hmm. Like maybe you had a trade in mind and that trade fell through and then you panicked and took who was at the top of your board at that time. Or you thought maybe he was not going to be out as long as he was, and you thought he might be ready for the training camp and he'd be back from surgery at the time. Or I don't know, maybe the analytics told you, no, he's going to be perfect in the NBA, but you didn't pay enough attention to the jump shot or whatever. Like all other avenues point to not laziness necessarily from the front office, but not doing the complete job, not completely doing their homework. Mm-hmm. And I understand completely if the Kings were trying to trade that pick. It made perfect sense for the Kings to try and trade that pick. But if a trade fell through on draft night, you felt you had something that it fell apart for whatever reason, like Devin Carter, with everybody on the board still, Devin Carter couldn't have been your number one option. And I felt that way that day. I was kind of talked into it a little bit because of like, oh, look how good of a rebounder he is. Look at the wingspan, right? We all kind of talk ourselves in the prospect once he belongs to the team or once he's drafted by the team. But I mean, there were two Sacramento boys on the board that would have been better. You know what I mean? You couldn't have more information about those two. You didn't have more information about Dalton Connect that everybody knew about. Like it just, I mean, add it to the list. Do I think if the Kings had nailed this draft, their season would be in a way better situation? No, but they would have had significantly better contributions to the first half of the season than what they got.
Well, I do. I think their season would be better. Like you'd have another guy in that rotation. If they would have nailed the draft, that assumes that this guy is a all-rookie, potential rookie of the year type player. Yeah, I think they'd be in a much better situation. Like, not two seed or anything like that, but it'd be in a much better situation. You know, Mike Brown might still be here. De'Aaron Fox might still be here if they would have nailed that pick, because you had somebody that was ready to contribute and contribute at a high level from day one, and that would have helped with the whole rotation thing that they delivered on. So the draft or the failures in the draft, those are ones that I can't justify. I can't work around. It's inexcusable.
I'm just scanning the chatty house, and I guess some people are on drugs today. Matt would have passed on Embiid. I'm sorry. I didn't realize Devin Carter and Joel Embiid were in the same conversation, number one. Number two, Carter was viewed as a great value pick. By who? Where's the value in a player that you should have known was not going to be able to play for half the year and was not going to be able to be in training camp when you're a team in a win-now position? What is the value in Devin Carter? Congratulations, you packed a player that might be good in 2 or 3 years, but you're not going to be here because you lost your job. Yeah, really valuable for a general manager and where the organization is at. I don't hate Devin, but there's no value in the position that the Kings were in to take a player like Devin who had his shortcomings and the injury issues on top of that. It just is not the right gamble to make.
Matthew,
I like the dude. I like Devin a lot. Actually, he's a good dude.
How long have you been doing this show?
4 years.
What's the number one rule? Don't get lost in the chatty house. That's a.
But I like them.
No, we love them. No, we love them. No, those are our people. Man, you can get lost there quick. You can get hey man, the Kings won by 42. That was great. Oh, it's great they won by 42, huh? Loser. Oh, okay. Maybe not.
I texted you that.
You did.
Devin Carter was a consensus top 5 type pick, top 7 type pick. He started to tumble down, and this is where we may not have known that, but it's their jobs to know that. He probably tumbled down because he wasn't going to be ready to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you got to know that. Yeah, that's what the consensus is, that he's a top 7 guy, and you're able to get him at 12 or 13 or wherever they were at. But there's a reason why he's still there. And I wouldn't have took that gamble. I mean, it worked for them before without the whole injury situation with Tyrese Halliburton. That's a guy that was – a lot of people thought might sneak into the top 5, and he fell down to him, and they took him, and it worked out for him. The injury thing, especially if that's the reason why he was falling down the draft board, that's just something I wouldn't have been willing to take a chance on.
Matt, your mic just quit. Your mic just said, "This is trash. I'm out. I don't want any more part of this. The Locked On Kings podcast is over.
Let me out, though."
Nope, still nothing. Oh, man, this has never happened. Mid-conversation, and he just left. He said, you know what?
Kings people cut his mic.
Yeah, oh, that's what happened. The Kings people cut his mic. Oh, man, that's tough.
My George might need to go buy himself a new mic, because I really just cut out like right then and there.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, we'll wait.
We're Matt George.
Matt George going to go watch a whole marathon of Lord of the Rings to get over this.
Matt was cooking, too.
Yeah, well.
He was ready to say something to me, too.
Overcooked.
Yeah.
It was overcooked. Yeah, he had to get the skillet off the grill. I had to go out there and get the brisket off the Traeger.
Hey, man.
Damn shame what happened to Matt.
Like I said, I tried to find different ways to help these guys stay in place. But that draft, man, there's no flipping that thing around. That is
so this awful. Is how CM Punk felt, huh?
Very good. Very good. I don't remember where you were going. I think you were going to yell at KC.
Yeah,
which is fine. You can always yell at KC.
I think it was something along the lines of like, who was Devin Carter the consensus – a consensus pick for, like, the draft experts and media members who are like all trying to analyze the draft, or was it by the front office and that has scouts in place that should know better than anybody else, like, and should be doing their homework better than anybody else? I don't know the answer to that question. Either way, like, Carter's on the team now. I do think Carter has a history or has a potential future in the NBA as something. I think he's trying to figure out what that something is. I don't think a lot of it comes on the offensive end unless he's attacking the basket. That jump shot needs a lot of work, and it's really, really slow. It does go in, but at times. I don't know why that would be a consensus pick or a consensus decision given the circumstances, because he doesn't fit the best player available category. He doesn't fit the position of need category. He just didn't fit, and he didn't at the time, and he doesn't now, and he still doesn't now. And I wish him the best and hope he can, like a lot of other things with this roster, prove me wrong.
All right, Matt, how do you feel? I mean, the Kings, obviously they get that did that 42 point win the other night do anything for you? Did the Zach LaVine performance do anything for you? Do you feel any differently than you might have after the Warriors game or prior to the All-Star break about this team after the way they played versus Charlotte?
I don't know if I feel like a lot differently, but it was needed, right? To see Zach go off the way that he did. And there were elements of that game, things that I took away from that game that I thought were really promising. First and foremost, like, there's no dismissing what they did because it was against the Charlotte Hornets. Like, it's not just you beat teams that you're supposed to beat. They beat the brakes off the team that they were supposed to beat. Like,
yeah, everybody else is doing it too, so it's a good thing you did.
Yeah, it's exactly what you were supposed to do. So I don't care that it was against Charlotte. You needed to get a win like that, and you got a win in a way that was really encouraging. I thought, like, Zach LaVine went off in the fourth quarter because he was just heat-checking and chucking everything, and that was awesome. That was a lot of fun. But the majority of scoring, the reason why Zach was so efficient through that entire game was the shots that he was getting, I thought, were way better. And I thought the Kings were doing a fantastic job of playing through Domantas Sabonis again. And this is like, you have this all NBA type talent who's one of his number one skills, the skill set is playing through him and the versatility that he gives you as the foundation of your offense. And for some reason, the Kings have gone further and further and further away from that, even as Sabonis has gotten better and better and better as a jump shooter, so that defense is sagging off of him, just can't work as well or doesn't work anymore. But they still have gone away from it. I know they're trying to get DeMar comfortable. They have this idea of Zach LaVine as a secondary playmaker and ball handler, and it hasn't really worked, but I thought Zach was able to play his game a lot more, play through Domantas Sabonis, get some drop-off passes, get some DHOs. And I thought the practice time over the weekend was evident in that game with, okay, these guys are doing a little better job getting in and out of their offense. Even DeMar DeRozan, he hit a number of threes in that game, a couple of threes where it wasn't his isolation game. It was off of a pass, catch and shoot, top of the key or from the wing, and he knocked down a three. So I thought the ball movement by the Kings was way better. I know they had that bad third quarter with the turnovers, and that was the main, that was the one negative I took from that game, was like, if you have a quarter like that against the Cleveland Cavaliers, Oklahoma City Thunder, you're in big trouble, because any big lead that you had is erased. Or if the game is tied at that point, you're down 15, 20 points if you have a stretch like that. They need to clean that up. But other than that, I thought they looked really, really good. I thought it was a well-coached game. We saw some changes to the rotation that I really liked. I thought it was a really encouraging performance from Sacramento. And now there's just the, okay, what's next, right? You have Utah tonight. Can you do the same thing against another team that you should beat? And then get ready, because the gauntlet is coming in March.
Hmm. How much stock do you take, or do you put in, excuse me, into practice time with this particular group? Do you think it's a little overblown, or it's something that really can help these guys try to prepare themselves for the final 25 games of the season?
Well, practice is never a bad thing. Like, the more practice you can have, the better, unless it's too much practice, like we heard with Mike Brown. But I just don't have expectations that practice time is going to solve the problems of this roster when it comes to the teams that they're going to face coming up. And I just don't think extra practice time is going to suddenly make this team able to not just compete with, because they can't just compete with Cleveland and the Knicks and the Cavs, or sorry, the Thunder. They have to win some of those games, especially on their home floor. They have to. So how are you going to be able to win a number of those games? Is the practice time going to make that big of a difference, or is it going to be because Zach LaVine puts you on his back and carries you, or DeMar DeRozan goes for 15 points in the fourth quarter and closes the game down for you? Like, I just don't think practice time solves enough over the final stretch of the season, because there's just a limited amount. Zach LaVine said after the game, he's a trial by fire guy. He learns by doing. He's a learner by experience. So no matter what happens, them getting out on the floor together, they're going to have to learn how to play together through that. And I think they are. They already have looked better. Zach LaVine's numbers over his first three or four games versus the last three or four games are significantly better. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing progress, but you a lot of those wins and a lot of that success you had were against teams that you should be beating, right? Dallas shorthanded, but a lot of games against New Orleans, the game against Charlotte the other night, game against Utah tonight. I'm not trying to dismiss it, because it's good. You're supposed to win those games. And for the most part, the Kings have. That's credit to them and Doug Christie. But now the real test is going to start. And I don't think 1 or 2 days of practice time is going to drastically change the outcome of those tests.
When you look at these teams kind of in the play-in picture, Matt, Minnesota, Golden State, Dallas, you just mentioned them a second ago, Sacramento. And then I guess maybe we throw Phoenix and Portland into that conversation. Do you feel like Sacramento has enough to separate themselves from a handful of those teams right there? Because it feels like we should probably put the Clippers in this conversation as well, because Golden State might be ascending in a direction that takes them up to that sixth spot and drops the Clippers down a little bit.
I think the Kings are a play-in team. I would be pretty surprised if they fall out of it. I think they finish 9 or 10. I think 8 or 7 is still possible and still should be the goal, but 9 or 10, I think, is where they're going to end up. I respect Portland. I'm not too concerned about Portland, and I think Sacramento has a little bit more to a lot more chemistry than the Phoenix Suns do right now with all the stuff that they're going through. So I like the Kings to hold on to that spot. Can they move up? I mean, they have one more game against the Golden State Warriors. If they win that game, they own the tiebreaker. That's going to be a really big game. Like the other teams that you mentioned in that group, the Clippers, I don't think the Kings can really touch. I mean, I guess we'll see.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today and let us surprise you.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
With the Clippers kind of starting that hell stretch in March, I think that game is in Los Angeles coming up, so that'll be kind of a good measuring stick or barometer. But I think that where the Kings are at is who they are. And that's both exciting and scary. It's exciting because as long as you're in the play-in, you have a shot. Right. If you finish 9 or 10, you win two games, you're into the playoffs. And even if you're playing OKC in the first round, you have a chance, and you have veteran talent on this team. Maybe you can do something. But what's also scary, guys, is like if this is what you go for, if you go for it and this is what you are, 9th or 10th team in the West, and you lose in the play-in again, you're going to finish like 13th or 14th in draft lottery odds, which means you don't have a pick. So now you don't have a pick. You have, not that a 12th overall pick was going to drastically save you or anything this summer, but it gives you an asset or something to use. To be fair, it does free up your other assets in the future from that Atlanta Hawks trade, so you could look at it that way. But now you're going into a summer where you don't have a lottery pick, and you have a lot of really, really big, or a couple big contracts that are tough to move, and other guys that are able to move that you might be hesitant to move. So if the Kings are going to go for it, which that is the goal, like they're going for it, then they just need to produce the result. They got to get out of the play-in at the very least. They got to get to the playoffs at some, because if not, they're going into a summer where it was kind of all for nothing. And I don't see any realistic scenario where this team is run. You're not running this team back to give them more time together. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, we kind of talked about that earlier, and you got a situation where maybe you make a decision on DeMar DeRozan, but it kind of feels like that would be the only move in the summer. Like, I don't think you're moving off of Zach LaVine unless Sabonis asks out. You're not moving on from him. Keegan Murray, you're probably giving him an extension, and the same with Malik Monk and Keon Ellis. So I don't know. I mean, outside of DeMar asking out, or you trying to make, you kind of are running back. And do you think that this team can be better with more time together, training camp, all this other stuff? Or are they perennial 9th, 10th team as constructed?
I think the best case scenario for this group without either a new star or a significant change is a perennial first-round playoff exit for the next 2-3 years. And on some, like, to some extent, that sounds appealing from the Sacramento perspective of, hell, I'll make the playoffs 3 straight years in a row. That sounds like fun, given everything we've gone through. But, I mean, look how frustrated we were last year after making it to the playoffs and losing in the first round once, and they took a step backwards, and that was frustrating. I'm also talking about, like, I think that's best-case scenario, not most-likely scenario. I just don't see this team as constructed being able to, with the state of the West and other teams improving, teams behind them that I expect to get better. Like, the Spurs are going to get better. Portland is playing well. I expect them to get better. One of these teams, and it's probably going to be in the West, knowing our luck, is going to get Cooper Flagg, right? Like, teams are going to get better behind you, and I don't see enough teams in front of you dropping off to where you, with a core of all 30-year-olds, including a guy in DeRozan who's 37 at the time, or is going to be 37 next year, like, how much can you expect that team to really all of a sudden improve and be a lot better? So I don't like the future outcome. I think this team is very short-term built, and if they can't get it done short-term, then there's no chance and or there's no hope for me of trying to make it work long-term. And you talk about, yeah, DeMar DeRozan is likely the guy that gets moved. DeMar might want that, too. We don't know. I'm not speculating, but DeMar has already made comments after the Fox trade of, like, he has to keep his future in mind. Totally understandable. Totally respectable. He's not demanding out or anything like that, but we'll see. And then, like, if you're the Kings and you can't move LaVine's contract and you don't want to move Sabonis' contract, because how in the world do you want to get better by trading DeMontis Sabonis? It doesn't make sense. Like, the pieces then you're looking to trade are Keegan, Malik, and Keon, right? These are your tradable assets that you can try and use to flip for better talent. And that's a uncomfortable position for a lot of Kings fans to be in, because to get something, you got to give up something. And they have a bunch of draft picks. Maybe they attach a bunch of draft picks to one of those guys, and maybe they can get something else. But we don't know what that else is at this point. We don't even know if the front office currently is going to be the one making that decision, or if someone's going to inherit this mess and then have to clean it up over the next couple of years.
Yeah, that'll be, I think that's the most interesting scenario to follow, is what happens with the front office, because there's so many domino effect decisions that happen with that, including the future of Doug Christie and the future of this group, as you just discussed them. Like, what happens with them? Can you get by, as Matt laid out, as we discussed earlier? Yeah, you get by with a 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, run here for another year for sure, in my opinion, with this group. I think once you get past that is where it gets a little murky. How do other people value, outside of Monty McNair and I guess Wes Wilcox, how do other general managers value Keegan Murray? How do they see him around the league? Do they see him, you know, at a max contract extension, at an affordable contract extension, at no contract extension? What do they see him at? And the biggest domino for sure this offseason will be what happens with that front office.
Time will tell. I mean, this front office needs a playoff appearance, bare minimum, in my opinion. They need it. Look, it's... there's the basketball side of things, and then there's the human being side of things. Like, I'm not rooting, and I don't think people should be rooting for anybody to be out of work or to lose their job, because these are livelihoods we're talking about. These guys will be fine, but from the basketball side of things, you took something that was really, really good. Like, you took something 2 years ago that had a tremendous amount of upside and took the league by storm. And I didn't expect it to get easier. By Mike Brown's own words, it was going to get harder, but he's lost his job. The star who couldn't get it done is now out. The third domino to fall has to be the front office that couldn't address the needs of this team over 2 years and then put them in my opinion, a worse situation financially and contractually going forward. So, like, if it doesn't work this year, I think a total reset is necessary. A total reset within reason. There's some things you can't change. But the thing you can change is your front office and bringing something in. And I don't know how appealing this job is to anybody who would come in and want it. I just know for sure, if I'm a general manager that's coming in and agreeing to this job, I'm demanding assurances. I'm demanding a long contract, as long as I could possibly get. And I'm demanding the patience of the organization to have minimum 2 years to just clean this mess up. Cause there's going to need some breaking down, or something's going to have to drastically change for this team to have a more long-term positive outlook. Yeah. So you need that assurance that I have the time and the patience to right this ship a little bit.
Okay. Well, that's the future. we still got a season to deal with now. We still got, and all isn't lost this year. Like, there's still plenty ahead for Sacramento this season. And a lot of fans had looked at, you know, this stretch of games with Charlotte and Utah as important for them. Like, they've got a difficult, you just said this yourself, Matt, they got a really, really difficult march ahead. They need to take take care of business against a bad Utah Jazz team who's marching out even worse players. They've got a very lengthy injury report that dropped earlier. The good news is Matt, Keon Ellis is available to play. Doug kind of danced around the topic of Doug Chris of Keon Ellis with you guys yesterday. But all looks like that ankle turn in the first half against Charlotte wasn't too bad.
This is the second time this season that this exact thing has happened. He, in a game, he stepped on a foot, tweaked his ankle a little bit, and then he's like, "Yep, I'm fine." Like, mm-hmm. Keon's a machine, man. He's an absolute warrior, not Golden State. Like, he's an awesome guy. That's a huge deal, because there was a bit of a moment in the Golden 1 Center when you saw him jogging up, and at least in the media section, we were like, is it a hamstring? Is it an ankle? What's wrong? You could see him favoring it. And then as soon as you watch a guy go back into the locker room, it's funny, there's a game happening in front of you, but like where we sit, which is up on the top of the concourse by the visitor's bench, if we're looking at the tunnel, you're looking down a row or sections of Kings fans. And there's a game happening in front of you, and every head's like this, just watching the dude go into the tunnel, trying to see if he's all right. So, especially with Keon, and hey, knock on wood, we experienced Malik going down at the end of last season, how drastically that changed this team. I would put Keon up there with that much of a high-impact player for this team right now. I still think he's been, if not one of the best stories, one of the best story on the team, the Kings this season. And the Kings are going to for sure need him down the stretch. I don't think, like, some Kings fans were disappointed because we didn't see the starting lineup change. And I don't think we're going to see it again. But the big difference that we saw was 4 minutes into the game, Keon Ellis came in and replaced Malik Monk. And that wasn't because Malik was playing bad. Malik got off to a good start. He had a couple shots right out the gate. But what that did was that didn't just get Keon out there earlier to help with early game defense. That put Malik in a position to where he could be out there with Zach LaVine to run that second unit, which I thought was drastically different, because Zach had a couple games to be kind of the head of that second unit. And it's not Zach's game, and it wasn't working. It just didn't look good. So this new rotation, because he did the same thing in the second half. Doug Christie did the same thing. He put Markelle Fultz in 4 minutes in to have Malik come to the bench to give Malik an opportunity with that second unit. At least against Charlotte, it worked. So I'm looking forward to seeing that again tonight against Utah.
Keon also hit those two threes when he entered the game too.
Immediately.
Those were big time shots.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Matt, you think DeMontis Sabonis should shoot the ball a little bit more than what he has since the trade has gone down? Do you think that's what it requires for this team to get a little bit more cohesiveness on the offensive end? I know, you know, he's looking for a lot of people all the time in the dribble handoff, but, you know, hey, man, shoot the ball. Like you said, you've worked on your jump shot. You know, you being an offensive threat at a number of different spots on the floor will help the offense. Do you think he should look for his shot just a little bit more?
I feel since the trade happened that he both wasn't looking for his shot and the Kings weren't playing through him. I thought he was being almost completely taken out of the offense, except for in New Orleans when they didn't have a big man he was cooking until they stopped going to him later in the game. But Sabonis should always shoot more. I think that's been a kind of a common feel. And Sabonis had an eye-opening moment, I felt, in the Hornets game, to where he was trying to run the DHO. Zach didn't come over. It just didn't work. And then he just turned around and pulled up for three. I was like, whoa, who's this guy? Like, and he missed the shot. And that's not really his. He more likes to shoot that three in rhythm, catch and shoot, and step into it. Not necessarily like I'm just going to shoot it while being without being mobile. But I thought that was, as long as if the Kings are playing through Sabonis more offensively, I think they can get away with him shooting less because of the amount of offensive talent that is still on this roster. Because DeRozan's going to take 16 shots a game, Zach LaVine should be right around that same number. Malik Monk can be up there. Even Keegan Murray should be probably getting more looks from three-point range. So the answer to your question, Casey, is if they continue to play through Sabonis the same way they did against Charlotte and get back to that, then I'm okay with him shooting less. But if they're not playing through him and he's only shooting seven shots a game, like, what are we, you're just, what is he doing? Like, he's not, he's just grabbing rebounds at that point and dishing out assists maybe every once in a while. So as long as you're playing through Domantas Sabonis, I can live with what he's giving you scoring wise.
Matt, I can't remember the last time the next home game graphic got as much attention as it did the other night at the Golden 1 Center. Of course, the next home game is, in fact, 1 week from Friday, March 7th, against the San Antonio Spurs. And De'Aaron Fox was on the graphic, and that got a reaction from some of the people inside the arena, which has sparked lengthy conversations, I'm sure, with the Locked On audience and across Sports Talk media about what De'Aaron's reception will be 1 week from Friday. Did you catch that reaction? What is your response to it, and what do you think it looks like Friday? Oh, I did it again. I asked three questions all at once. Literally the worst broadcast journalist ever.
I love it. I love it. So what I took away from that is, like, when De'Aaron returning is, like, we know it's happening, and people are already predetermining what their responses are going to be. When they show that tribute video, when they announce him for the first time in the starting lineup, that is predetermined. I'm going to boo him. I'm going to cheer him. What that was, I felt, was an impulse, because nobody knew that graphic was coming. The Kings had just, like, Charlotte just taken a timeout because the Kings got a bucket or something. And then they put the graphic up, and the boos were noticeable immediately. That crowd's impulse was to see that man and boo, or at least part of that crowd. It wasn't 17, 18,000 people booing Fox, but it was loud enough to be noticeable for sure. But also, on the other side of that coin, people weren't ready to cheer for him. So those boos weren't getting drowned out by anybody. So, and you even saw the reaction, like the TV caught the coaching staff's reaction. The coaching staff was heard the boos and looked up at the screen, and you see Doug go, oh, and then go back to coaching. I don't like it, but I don't blame anybody for doing it. Like, if you're paying money, as long as you're not like violating the code of conduct, that if you sit in the seats that Kenny sits in, you know, you get those little cards that say, this is what you can and can't do. Right. You can't most be saying, people, like, Kenny has to read that every day. It's actually got Kenny's picture on it.
Right. Most of us haven't seen those, but yeah.
I've only seen them in passing, but Kenny reads them every
there
day.
This is all lies.
There is a rumor that they were created because of Kenny's behavior during a particular game last year.
Yeah. That's fair. Also, side note, before I continue, because I don't want to forget this, did y'all catch Jonas Valanciunas going for that loose ball into the courtside seats the other night? So it wasn't quite like a Shaq parting the Red Sea type thing where everybody, but Jonas, he checked up, so he didn't run to everybody. But
was it
there
in
was
the
a ball
corner?
Yeah, it was in the corner.
Yeah, I was slow down, big fella.
It was right where Rosé and Baby Rain used to sit. And I was thinking, oh my God, if that were five or 10 home games ago, like, that would have been terrifying for Baby Rain. But anyway, side note, I hope they're not sitting there courtside.
You don't have babies next in the game. Front row, but whatever.
Well, that's another thing too. Either way, regardless, going back to what I was saying, I feel that the crowd is going to, there's going to be enough people predetermined that they're going to be there to cheer and support De'Aaron Fox, that the boos aren't going to be as noticeable, I think. But I don't have a problem with the boos. I certainly wouldn't do it. I don't think De'Aaron Fox deserves it. I think he was great to this city community wise. He was great on the floor. You don't like the exit. That's fine. I get it. You voice your opinion however you want to. I don't think it's the best look, but whatever. Who the hell am I to say that? I certainly wouldn't do it. I can't do it anyway. I'm in the media section. But if I were a paying customer, I would absolutely be giving the man a standing ovation for everything that he did. And as soon as the game starts, I hope he goes 0 for 20. Like, that's how I would feel about the situation.
Well, he played last night. He might.
Well, he got it out of the way, which is a bad thing. Look, Fox, we know how Fox plays when he's pissed off. You want to boo the man and piss him off? Be my guest. he's going to cook in Sacramento because that's what he does. And that's what players do after returning. And fans can treat it however they want to treat it. It's going to be a interesting, fun night from a media perspective. That's for sure.
Okay.
Do you think, do you understand, or do you feel like you understand why people feel that way about De'Aaron Fox? Because I said yesterday, it's probably more than we realized initially. We thought, oh, it was just a little Twitter thing. Like, no, there's some people that are, like, genuinely upset with this, how this all played out. Do you Does it make sense to you, or are you, still not really able to grasp why people would be upset with De'Aaron Fox?
The parts that don't make sense to me are the extremes, like going to the extreme of kind of the personal attacks and going like that far, which I've seen, but that's every fan base. I believe people don't like getting broken up with, and it's easy to hate the guy that breaks up with you than like him and watch him go on and blossom elsewhere. Like, that's just, I think that's kind of human nature. So I get fans in that sense. Like, Fox certainly hasn't done what Buddy Hield did and said anything like that, although he might have said it public or privately. I have no idea. I haven't gotten that impression from him at all. I know he loves the city. He loved the fan base. But obviously the organization didn't work out. To me, look, this organization's had a history for a long time of making the wrong decisions and being unstable. And De'Aaron Fox was here for a good chunk of that, but not nearly all of it, not even close to all of it. So this is more of a continuation of the organization's history and the organization's pattern than it is who I believe De'Aaron Fox to be. I've known De'Aaron Fox to be a really, really good stand-up guy and a hard worker for the majority of his career. People do notice, and they are right, that he took plays off over the last couple of years. And he had, you can even go back to the Tyrese Haliburton trade where he was injured and then all of a sudden miraculously healed after Tyrese was traded and Sabonis came here. That's part of who Fox is. If fans don't like that and they haven't liked that for years, I 100% understand it. I don't think Fox has done anything to deserve the amount of venom that he's gotten. I do understand how his circumstance impacted the Kings negatively to where the value that they could get for him. And in the end, that screwed over the team that the fans love or that hurt the team that the fans love. So if they have frustrations with that, I get it. To me, this organization put themselves in that position to begin with. They're more to blame than De'Aaron Fox is, or at least the people that are currently in the position for it. So that's always how I viewed it. But like, the last thing I'm going to do is start telling fans how they should treat or respond to the dude, because that just opens a can of worms that nobody wants. So I think it's necessary. It'll happen. He returns, and then hopefully everybody can just move on.
Hey, it's a protection mechanism.
Yeah.
It's easier to, like, hate and be angry and feel all of that than anything else. You hate, you anger, and they succeed, you can go, I hated that person anyways. They suck. It's just easier to protect yourself that way. It's easier to protect yourself with hate than love in this regard, when you talk about getting broken up with and so on. Great stuff, Matt. Thanks for joining us a day early. You're off to Arizona tomorrow?
I'm off to Mesa, Arizona, Ho-Ho-Cam Stadium for some A's baseballs.
Sorry? You're going where?
Ho-Ho-Cam Stadium. It's the real stadium.
Well, enjoy that. All right, have fun. Yeah, all right.
It's a real. It's look it up.
I don't. No, I'm not googling that on my work computer. Are you kidding me?
Ho-Ho-Cam Stadium.
Okay, you just keep repeating it.
Wow.
Just to be clear. You're saying, yep. Do it again.
Ho-Ho-Cam Stadium. Okay.
Popping out there.
What's that cost? $19.99 a month? What's that cost?
Just don't put .com after.
Okay. All right. All right. We appreciate you, Matt. Thanks for carving out some time for us.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier entirely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. Member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
The road to the MLB All-Star Game presented by MasterCard starts with you. Who will take the field this July? The power is in your hands. Phase 1 of the 2026 Konami eBaseball MLB All-Star Ballot is open. Vote up to 5 times daily for your favorite stars. And get a bonus daily vote by downloading the Konami eBaseball MLB Pro Spirit game. Top vote getters advance for the chance to be a starter. Cast your ballots at MLB.com/vote. MLB trademarks used with permission.